Good morning to you, Mr. Chairman, and to members of the committee. For the record, I'm Neil Kirk, representing the towns of Deering and Ware in Hillsborough District 2, and I'm the prime sponsor of this bill. Before I begin, I'd like to congratulate the chairman, or thank the chairman, for continuing this to 8:30 in the morning as on a Thursday morning as opposed to midnight on a Saturday.
Thank you for coming.
The purpose of this bill, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is to give the public a direct voice in certain major energy projects that affect their lives on a daily basis, a voice that is not currently provided for in statute. The world of energy production and transmission has changed substantially over the past 20 years since our laws requiring state approval of large energy facilities was first enacted. Today, the variety of practical production facilities has multiplied, and they are increasingly larger and more complex. Years ago, 40-story windmills and 135-foot transmission towers were unheard of. Today, they're legion, and their impact on the environment, both natural and aesthetic, is potentially huge. Our laws have not kept up with these changes. The 15 members of the Site Evaluation Committee are appointed technocrats. They represent various state agencies from DES to DRED, from the PUC to HHS to DOT. Yes, Parks and Recreation and Cultural Affairs are represented, two among the 15. But even those two need not be members of the subcommittee considering a particular project. The Site Evaluation Committee's statutory charge is, quote, to maintain a balance between the environment and the need for new energy facilities in New Hampshire, to ensure that the state has an adequate and reliable supply of energy in conformance with sound environmental principles, unquote. But the only concern for the visual impact of these massive projects is the requirement that the site and the facility, quote, will not have an unreasonable adverse effect on aesthetics, unquote. The recent Antrim decision to the contrary, this provision has been more honored in the breach than in the observance. No member of the public sits on the Site Evaluation Committee. No elected officials sit on the Site Evaluation Committee. While both the public and elected officials can offer testimony at public hearings, they cannot participate in the actual decision to grant or deny a certificate. That makes sense if the purpose of the committee is to determine the public need for the energy provided by these projects, the technical, financial, and managerial competence of the applicants, and the impact on the natural environment. That might have been the purpose decades ago, but it cannot be the only purpose today. With major projects today impacting our visual environment in ways not dreamt of before, the public is clamoring for its opinions to count in these significant facility decisions. They don't now, and they must in the future. Governor Lynch recognized this when he said on many occasions that the Northern Pass project should not go forward unless the people affected were in agreement. It's not just the people in the community in which the facility is sited, nor in abutting communities whose daily lives are affected. It's the people who drive to work on the state's roads, who look out their kitchen windows on the majestic beauty of our hills and valleys, who walk in the woods or go for a picnic or watch the sunset from a hilltop, who hunt and fish and drive snowmobiles, who tour the state's historic sites, visit the White Mountain National Forest, and bike the Kankamangas. These are the people of New Hampshire, and they want their voice to be counted in any siting decision. House Bill 484 gives them a determinative voice. The bill requires an applicant to state whether any part of the energy facility over 50 feet above the ground is visible to the naked eye from any public property. It allows 100 voters in any community to petition the Site Evaluation Committee asserting part of the facility over 50 feet above the ground is visible to the naked eye from public property in their community. If the Site Evaluation Committee determines such visibility exists in a particular community, and if a petition has been filed for that community, then House Bill 484 requires a vote in each such community on whether the community is in favor of the project. If the total of the votes is in the negative, the project will not receive a certificate. That, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, is democracy in action. For those who would say that New Hampshire is not a referendum state and that our large legislature is truly representative of the people, I would reiterate that today neither the people nor their representatives in this House have any real say in the siting of major energy facilities. Give the people their voice. Give the people their vote. And let us know that when massive energy facilities appear on the horizon, it's because the people not only need them, but want them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be pleased to answer any questions the committee has.
Representative Kirk, can you also speak to your
amendment? Yes, Mr. Chairman. The amendment deals with paragraph 7 on page 2, lines 25 through 30. The original language said each petition needed to be signed only by 25 or more individuals. But as I was rereading the Site Evaluation Committee statute, the petitions that they usually get have at least 100 signatures. And so for consistency's sake, this amendment raises the level to 100 or 5% of the population if it's a small town. And that's all the amendment does. It's not a substantive amendment in terms of changing the intent of the bill.
Value of developing that resource taken away from them, how do we justify that on the consideration of property rights?
I appreciate the question, Representative Townsend. I think that decision was made by the U.S. Supreme Court in U.S. versus Ambler in 1916 when they validated zoning and said that it was not a taking. The concept is that for reasons of health or safety and a variety of other reasons, the public can limit property rights, that is to say, the usage of one's property. And this goes beyond using your property in a way that would be detrimental to your neighbor's property. For example, one could argue that the sound of large windmills, which can be heard on abutting properties, reduces their value, and it would be legitimate for the state to say, sorry, you cannot use your property in such a way, by putting up these large windmills, that will adversely affect your neighbor. I think the issue that you raise is an important one, but I think it's settled law. I don't think this is a taking, nor would anyone construe it to be a taking. A constitutional taking.
Are you asking that to an attorney or a representative?
Yes, representative.
I see that this bill is designated FN, which means financial note. I can't see the financial impact. Can you explain what that might be?
No, Representative Rappaport, I cannot. I don't see the financial impact of this at all, but though the powers that be have determined there is one, there is no fiscal note that's yet been written. My guess is the note will come out as meaning stating that the financial impact is insignificant.
Any other questions for Representative Kirk?
Ma'am. Good morning.
Are you familiar with the fine that Bible the SEC's guidelines that have been published on their website for CITES that include community input, pretty extensive requisite in those guidelines? Very extensive description in there about how the communities can interact and provide information to the SEC. that I don't know is whether or not those guidelines are actually utilized, and B, how your bill would work in relation to this.
I have not read those guidelines. I have read the statute, which sets forth the parameters in which the guidelines operate. The basic distinction between current statute and my bill is that current statute simply says there has to be input. In other words, a public hearing, a petition. Someone on the site evaluation committee has to listen to the public. My bill says the public has a determinative voice. It's not simply a question of appearing at a hearing and stating your opinion, as hundreds of people did on Tuesday. And this committee could accept that or reject what they said. This bill says that if a project is going to be visible, and the bill defines what visible means, then every voter in the community in which it's visible, and for Northern Pass that could be many, many communities because it starts at the Canadian border and goes over to Deering, every voter in every community that's visually affected by this will have an opportunity to participate in a referendum on whether or not this should go forward. It's not for every project. It's only for those projects which are very visible, something 50 feet or higher, that can be seen from a public place in their community. And it's the kind of thing that outrages the public or generates enough public interest that people start bringing around petitions. So two things have to happen. There has to be visibility, and the community has to be very upset by this. And it's not a single community. It's every community that has a visual impact from the project that will be voting. If we simply use the current process, then we have people who were put in place to make a decision on one basis, not fully able to take into account other factors, other values. The system was set up at a time when a whole different set of principles was involved. Let's get energy here and make sure we don't damage the environment. But as I said, things have changed. The facilities are so huge now and affect so many communities that there are other factors that technocrats, that go beyond the real ability of a technocrat to decide. Let me use this opportunity to make one other point. This committee has a very onerous responsibility in this area. The process is going forward. Northern Pass marches forward. The big windmill applications march forward. If this committee punts and simply retains the bills or in effect doesn't act, they will in effect be saying these projects should go forward. Because the projects are going forward, and probably before the legislature meets next session, decisions will be made, especially on Northern Pass. Doing nothing is not acceptable in response to the public outcry over these projects. There are many things you could do, from a moratorium of 1 year or 2 years to my bill to some of the others. But I believe this committee has a responsibility to act and deal with this, and deal with this in this session in a way that in some way allows the public to have their voice. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So I see the clause that you're referring to and how that would function. So my question is, if this is only inclusive of those that have a visual impact, what about other members of the larger community, or they might be an audible impact or some other negative impact, and those that would have some economic impact to any such ruling that came out of the SEC? Should they not be included in
You might want to include them, but to some extent the economic impact has already been considered by technical people who are competent to deal with that, although I could see particular cases where there might be such a huge economic impact that you would want to extend it. As far as the audible impact is concerned, my understanding is that in most of the projects we're seeing today, the windmill projects, it's relatively short range, that is to say within feet or certainly within a mile. It's not the kind of thing that goes throughout the valleys and is whining day or night audibly across the valleys. If I'm wrong on that, I'd be perfectly willing to have this bill amended to provide for that. But I would remind you that we need to make some compromises between public participation in every aspect of every decision and public impact, public participation when there is a major impact. And the visual one is the one, at least in this day and age, that seems to be most dominant. That seems to be what people are talking about with the large windmills and Northern Pass and its tall towers.
Representative Backus and then Representative Basser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative. Let me just hypothesize that there is a project that when the wall structure is more than 50 feet high, which is vitally important for the state, maybe to maintain electric reliability or to meet the demand for electric, anticipate electric growth. Your bill would allow a number of towns in the area to have a veto over that project. My question to you is, do you think there should be some way to not have that, those towns have that veto power in the case where there's a project that may be important for the state as a whole?
Yes.
Would you like to have an amendment that would address that, or do you think your bill does address it?
My bill does not address that. I don't think that's an issue immediately, although I agree with you, it's the kind of thing once you're under certain circumstances, which we could both hypothesize, might be important. If it's the committee's wish that that kind of an amendment be drafted at this time, I'll think it through and get something done. But I don't think it's, at this point, it's of such an urgent nature that it should impede this committee's ability to go forward and figure out what we do about the problem that's facing us immediately.
In place to do these types of projects, because I do notice that they're all over the country, they're all over the world.
Yes, we're a representative republic, and yes, we could devise a system where there would be actual public representation on the committee, which doesn't exist today. As I said, it's technocrats. There's no member of the public. There's no elected official on the committee. You could do that. That's one way. And in one sense, I think you have a very good point in that my bill reacts to the urgent need for these projects that are facing us. In the long term, it might make a lot of sense to revise the composition of the Site Evaluation Committee and redo its charge in order to address these issues. And I think that would be an important thing to do. But even in that case, there will, in the future, I imagine, be projects which outrage the public and where they want their voice to be heard. And remember, this bill really requires a lot of communities to do a lot of work and two things to happen simultaneously for there to be a vote. There has to be a determination by the Site Evaluation Committee that there is a visual impact, and the affected communities have to petition to make sure that their community is going to have an opportunity to participate. That kind of action is probably only going to take place when some very large, unpopular project is proposed. So I think there are corrective mechanisms in the bill so that we don't become what you, Representative Levasseur, suggested, that this become a referendum on every single project. I don't believe that will be the case, and it certainly is not the intent of the bill.
This question has to do with fairness, not just the company proposing Northern Pass, but any company working on a massive project, expending their own money, not taxpayers' money, comes into an area to do a project, spends a considerable amount of money and time, which is also the case here, under existing laws, and then we're asked to come along and change those laws. Where is the fairness to this company that could lose millions, multi-millions of dollars on a project that they thought they had permission to go forward with?
Changing the rules in midstream is something that is commonly done by legislatures. Congress does it most of the time with respect to tax laws, when in the middle of the year they'll pass a new tax law and make it retroactive to the beginning of the year. We do this in this House and in this legislature in various ways. It's one of the risks that businesses undertake when they choose to involve themselves in activities that are regulated. Indeed, in activities that are not regulated. Let's take fire sprinklers, for example. We recently passed, this last year or the year before, a change that would ban fire suppression systems in single and two-family homes, right in the middle of goodness knows how many projects that had already done the engineering work to have these things. And therefore, they couldn't go ahead with that because the law became effective prior to the time they had gotten their approvals. So while on the one hand we can all say that, gee, this is unfair, that's the way the system has worked for decades, both here and throughout the United States. And it's not that it's a surprise to anybody participating. Public service and Iberdrola, is that the way it's pronounced? Certainly know that through their lobbyists and others, that that's one of the risks you take in doing business where you must get government approval.
If the process worked the way that you're describing it 40 years ago, then local communities would have prevented the Seabrook power plant from being developed. And that would have pleased a lot of people at the time. However, Seabrook now produces 40% of our power. It is shown so far to be safe and low-cost producer of energy, and I think surrounding communities probably would support it now rather than reject it. Is there a possibility that we might have unforeseen consequences if we did this based on local public reaction, which is more fearful than the project really deserves?
I think your question raises a basic philosophical issue as well as a practical issue. Who best makes decisions for the people of the state of New Hampshire? Technocrats or the people themselves? There are unforeseen consequences when either of those groups makes decisions. So, had this been in effect 40 years ago and had the affected communities determined, no, we don't want Seabrook, we would not have Seabrook today. But we might have a lot more wind power or solar power or something else or a lot more natural gas. Who knows what we would have had? What you're really asking is, do the people of this state want these kinds of decisions made only by technically oriented people who are experts in their area? And I say, yes, generally, but no for some things where personal values such as visibility and aesthetics are concerned. No bureaucrat can make a decision for me when it comes to aesthetics. That's a very individual decision. So, or safety. That's not a complete answer, but it's where I'd like to bring the discussion to at this time. I appreciate the question. It's a good one.
Representative Mann, Representative Pastor, and Representative Levesque.
I guess I'll ask one or two questions. Has anybody looked into if this law were would there be any location in the state where you could erect windmills that would be invisible to everybody? It would be not visible to anybody. Would this law possibly have the consequence that we could not put renewable power anywhere in the state?
No. It depends on how tall the windmill is, number one, whether it's visible from a public place. This doesn't apply to a windmill that's visible from my porch on the neighboring mountaintop, because that's not a public place. This rule only applies to public places, from state parks, public roads, that kind of thing. I guess I don't know enough about the topography of New Hampshire to answer that question. And then the other, the other point is, of course, some windmills are not objectionable, and people wouldn't, even though they were visible, be able to get 100 signatures or be able to persuade the public generally that this was such an eyesore that it shouldn't be done. So I don't think this would at all prevent windmills from happening. It certainly, I suspect, would prevent the very, very large windmills that are very visible to many people in many communities from happening. And frankly, I think that's the right decision.
I have read that there's tremendous benefits of scaling up size of windmills. The reason why they're made so large is because they're just tremendously more efficient as they get larger. So if anything, the trend would be the larger windmills and the practicality. So in a sense, a project with smaller windmills might not be even justifiable. So have you heard, are you aware of this? I mean, would that impact your statement that perhaps there must be some places that, in other words, would this affect your last answer?
I have read the same thing that you have, that large windmills are much more efficient in generating power and much more cost effective. If that's the way the industry is going, and if to get wind power this state has to have these large windmills all over, I think that doubles the necessity for public input. The idea for me, from my point of view, that when I drive through New Hampshire and I walk through the woods, I'm going to be surrounded by these huge machines is unacceptable. And if the technocrats on this committee are going to remake my state visually, I demand my voice.
Just ask a follow-up. Would it be reasonable to have technocrats and a large statewide project to identify a part of the state of New Hampshire that would be devoted to windmills and the rest excluded? In other words, have a reservation for the where you actually compensate the landowners locally, so you isolate the eyesores in one facility.
In whose backyard do you propose to have this isolated windmill farm?
Well, mine.
Well, let me respond this way. On a trip to China, our airplane flew over a part of the Gobi Desert, which for at least 200 miles had no human habitation, no human structures, except huge windmills, hundreds if not thousands of them. There is no Gobi Desert in New Hampshire. We're a relatively small state. China's a relatively large country. I don't know of any place in the state where that would make sense, although if you suggest the White Mountain National Forest.
I don't want the debate to take a more philosophical turn, but I was struck by the
hopefully
fact
it's
that
not a debate anyway.
I was struck by the fact that you cast this committee as basically a bunch of technocrats deciding something for the people. And wouldn't you say that rather the function of this committee would be to try to strike a fair balance between personal, individual interests that we acknowledge and recognize, and state interests, group interests that would be more like for the common good? Wouldn't that be the charge rather than decide whether we are deciding for this or that or the other?
I would like that to be the case. But at the time this committee was established, that was not the structure that was created. If you read the statute, the kinds of people on the committee, they represent various departments and various divisions of various departments, were technically oriented people. The concern was, here's the power that we need. Can we accept it? And at what cost to the, at that time, really, the physical environment? Aesthetics was a tag-end consideration. The beauty of the state was not something that was facing it. And it was appropriate at that time because the kinds of projects that we had were relatively, compared to today, small scale. As I said in my testimony, the world has changed. We need to change the composition of that committee, among other things. But we also need a way on these exceptional projects to have the public voice involved determinatively. We cannot rely, in a case like Northern Pass, simply on 15 folks in Concord.
Would you say that the fact that I sit as a professor of literature says something about a change in the composition of the committee, not being made by just technocrats, but having some sensitivity to beauty and to aesthetics and to human needs?
I fully agree that you are sensitive to all of those things, but you are not, I don't believe, on the site evaluation committee. Ah, and that, yes, and that's why I know you're going to vote in favor of House Bill 484.
Yeah, I think we should get clear which committee we're talking about. I believe that Representative Kirk was talking about the site evaluation committee as filled with a bunch of technocrats. Certainly he wasn't talking about the science, technology, and energy. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, thank you for taking my question, Representative Kirk. The member from Lyme actually set the stage for my question fairly adequately. You have said several times that SEC is full of bureaucrats and technocrats, and this is needed because there's limited opportunity for public input, and that's what's needed to correct the imbalance, in your opinion. How would you then respond to the Antrim decision, which, after 20 months of public input and deliberations, ultimately was rejected on the basis of visual impact, aesthetics, and environmental impact?
As I mentioned in my testimony, that is the exception, not the rule. And I believe that was an extraordinary situation in which these towers dominated a particular pond owned by the Audubon Society and overwhelmed it and might have impacted bird life and other kind of natural life in an unacceptable way. That was an extraordinary situation. And there may be others, but I'm not aware of them, where the committee has gone this way. And frankly, even in that situation, I think it would have been very nice if the people of Antrim had an opportunity to say the sanctuary was more important than the power. This bill would have allowed that.
Are you saying that there was at no point public hearings conducted by the SEC where the public was allowed to give input?
Not at all. Please don't misunderstand me. The Site Evaluation Committee, not the Science and Technology Committee, the Site Evaluation Committee accepts public input. They hold public hearings in all of the counties affected by the projects. They gather this information. But that really isn't the charge and the ethos of the committee. They are designed to balance the natural environment with only, as I say, a tag end for aesthetics against the need for power. If the power can be done consistent with not harming nature to a great extent, then it should go forward. That's the mindset. That's the legislative mindset or the statutory mindset. I think that needs to change. I don't think considerations of visual impact are a significant enough part of our current regulatory process. And that's what this bill is designed to change. There are other ways to do that, Mr. Chairman and Representative Levasseur. I understand that. And if that's the way the committee wants to go, more power to you. But this is one way and a very important way.
Do I own my view?
To a limited extent, yes. Depends on how far your property line is. You certainly own your view up to your property line. And beyond that, you have no... there may be exceptions for violations of health and things like that if somebody starts to put a dump in there, burn stuff, and raise smoke, which interferes with your view. But by and large, no. You don't own the view. I can do with my property what I wish, even if it impairs your view over my property.
Representative Badney, and then another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Kirk. part of my question was asked by Representative Townsend about Seabrook, but the only form of power I can think that's fairly much invisible is hydro, of which New Hampshire has very, very little. I mean, you've got tall chimneys for all the other wood-burning plants, gas-burning plants, coal-burning plants. So can you speak to that? How would we ever build a power plant?
Thank you for that question. If we're building a power plant, it's got a tall chimney like the Bow plant. It might affect a number of communities, but the visual impact is so small that my guess would be that most voters who participate in this referendum, most voters would say, let the project go forward. I don't think we should underestimate the practical nature of New Hampshire residents and citizens and voters. A small impact is acceptable. It's the huge impact that isn't.
How about offshore? Some people believe the best wind in New Hampshire is offshore. The question is how far out, but even out at the Isle of Shoals, you'd still be able to see these things moving. Would it prevent something like that?
It certainly could involve a referendum on the part of the towns that are along the seacoast or even back, yes. But isn't that appropriate? I mean, don't we want the people to say that if you're going to take our seascape and place all of these kinds of windmills or whatever on it, that the people should have an opportunity to say, no, we don't want that, or yes, that's acceptable. The battles over Nantucket, as you well know, are legion and provide an example, I think, of the fact that many people find these kinds of windmills an unacceptably high visual cost to getting the power they want.
Representative Pastor and then Representative Levasseur.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to follow up on a comment from Representative Nicholas. Your bill, this is what I find confusing, your bill comes right after the first decision made by the site evaluation committee, primarily on aesthetic grounds. So to me, that decision by the SEC shows, if anything, that the SEC is working, that it is not the group of technocrats that you described who only have one issue in mind, and that's the production of power or whatever, but that they are taking into consideration other issues. So wouldn't you think that at this point, it would be a good idea to just see if they can do their job as they have shown to be able to do in the most recent case, than to transform the composition of the committee?
I don't know how you're going to vote on the gambling bill. But I'm not a betting man, and I would not want to bet the farm, literally and figuratively, on whether the site evaluation committee will turn down the Northern Pass project on aesthetic grounds. And if you take the approach that you're suggesting, that's what might happen. I don't know if the odds are 50-50 or 1 out of 100. But I'm not willing to take that risk. And frankly, I think there are tens of thousands of people, especially in the North Country, who don't want to take that risk either.
Bridges, buildings, including additions, towers, poles, turbines, and wires that exceed 15 feet height. Many of these items here, do you know of any in the United States that are under 50 feet or under? Like most bridges are well over 50 feet. Communication towers, obviously windmills, and transmission lines, all the ones I've seen easily exceed 50 feet.
I believe you're correct. And while you could raise that to 75 feet or some other number or lower it if you wish, the point was to define this in such a way that things that will be visible will trigger the public input mechanism.
Thank you.
If you don't think the public should have a role in this, then kill the bill. If you think the public should have a role in this, then pass the bill with whatever amendments you think are appropriate. The issue is whether the public should have a vote on these high visibility projects. It's as simple as that. I believe they should. I don't want, as much as possible, I don't want the folks in Concord, well-intentioned, competent people, don't get me wrong, technocrats was not a dirty word, is not a dirty word. I don't want those folks making decisions on what are basically opinions and values and judgments. Frankly, I don't want some technocrats in Concord picking the next House of Representatives, which is another way to get a legislature.
I think that's the subject of a different bill.
Thank you for bringing me back to reality, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. May I be excused to go to another committee where I have work to do? Thank you.
I see you this afternoon.